If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too.
Good morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Plyer and Mr. Dave Schwann. Hello, good morning to you.
Getting an early start here.
I've given you a little bit of an early start. Did you get my little Easter egg from Anderson's Candy?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
It's that a good sugar boost at 4:30 in the morning.
I need all the help I can get.
Well, you know, I grabbed you a little earlier because it is, and just to discuss this, it is the... we've got a lot to talk about with This Week in History this morning, but it is the 92nd anniversary of WGN Radio this week.
Oh, okay.
Yes, which we were heavily participating in the 90th. And, you know, this station obviously has a ton of history here. It was March 24th, Dave, that under the leadership of Colonel Robert McCormick, the Chicago Tribune leases enough time on the Zenith Edgewater Beach Hotel station, WJAZ, to assure that we would have some programming. The Tribune obtained the call letters WGN for World's Greatest Newspaper from Great Lakes skipper Carl D. Bradley. So there was this kind of morphing from March until about May until we ended up really having our own radio station here in the Tribune Tower. But we were like in the Drake Hotel. We were in the Wrigley Building. We were all over the place.
Yeah, I think it was WDAP initially.
That is
correct.
A couple
of guys put that on the air way back, maybe even 1922.
It was. It was 1922.
There's a picture of two of them sitting in front of what looks like a Buck Rogers type set or something like
that. In the hallways upstairs.
In the hallway here, yeah. I love those pictures that we have here.
You know, the WGN Gold website that used to be up is now part of WGN Plus. So you can actually go on there and look at the history of WGN Radio right on there. That takes you back to those days and has some of those pictures on it.
Cool. I hope it does because WGN was so involved in the formation of broadcasting in this country.
Exactly.
And so this has to be, you know, that has to be pictures and sound. I have no idea how far back we have archived sound, but... boy, when you think about some of the things that went on in the as far back as the 1930s, that has shaped the way we live today. You know, WGN was a part of all that.
Not only that, but I mean, we really kind of created the first sitcom. You think about television programs that are on today. We really created the first radio sitcom that rolled in. It was Sam and Henry, which became Amos and Andy nationally on NBC, but we were the first to really put even a comedy on the air. So forget all the news, the music, the Cubs, everything else. We were pretty innovative back then and still are So we sat down with Chuck Shaden a couple years ago to talk about the 90th anniversary.
There's the man to
WGN,
sit down and talk with.
And we'll listen to a little bit of the historical perspective of the beginnings of WGN Radio. One evening in early 1924, Colonel McCormick and his mother were given a special radio demonstration, and it really excited him. And while the Tribune, you know, could have applied, like others, for their own license, the colonel wanted to lease time, kind of dipping his toe into radio, then owning it. But on March 23rd, 1924, he entered into an agreement to rent time and facilities from WJAZ. And in addition to the news, the Tribune provided musical programming and other things as well. And the station was actually launched this week on March 29th. It wasn't ours. We were still leasing, but it was March 29th.
And they used the WGN call letters.
Yes, for the first time.
And now, then a little later after that, there's another station in town called WDAP.
Okay.
And it had been owned by the Drake Hotel, or it was at the Drake Hotel. And then they moved over, WGN moved over to the top of the Drake, and they were using for a little while the WDAP call letters. Then they changed them to WGN, and there they had studios atop the Drake Hotel until it moved to the Tribune Tower quite a few years later in 1935.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, what's amazing here is that, you know, you talked about WDAP. Now, these were some young Chicago guys. They were radio enthusiasts. And it was Thorne Donnelly and Elliot Jenkins from Midwest Radio Central that started this experimental station that was DAP at one time. And it started broadcasting from the Wrigley Building right across the street, of course, from the Tribune Tower. And, you know, again, there was only those two guys, a couple of other programming guys, and, you know, there would be live dance music, but they also did some programming in the Drake Hotel as well.
Well, yeah, they occupied, get a load of this, two handball courts near the top of the Drake Hotel.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where the stations
were. And the reason they moved from the Wrigley Building because a tornado went through town and damaged the antenna atop the Wrigley Building.
Wow.
Right up, the antenna was up near the, you know, in the tower by the clock on top of the Wrigley Building.
You know, I've seen pictures of WDAP and that first radio station, and I noticed that the ceilings were very high, and I thought it looked more like you would do something in a television studio. Of course, television wasn't around back then with lighting and so forth, but I thought, boy, they're very narrow and very tall. So they were...
Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, so they were, handball courts.
Well... Yeah, that's they weren't going to lower the ceiling for this stuff, but they had to drape everything with heavy fabrics like drapes and all of that to deaden the sound. You know, those early radio studios looked a lot like what you would see in a living room of a very well-off family in the early 1920s, and they would have plush, thick carpeting all around. They had drapes on the wall. And then here for the radio studio, they even had heavy draperies hanging from the ceiling or covering the ceiling.
Okay.
And you would almost think it was a living room because if you look closely, you could see the microphone or two.
Yeah, right.
But otherwise, no, there were some easy chairs in there and a couple of desks and always, always a grand piano in the studio. And it was very comfortable, but no windows. There were never any windows in these early studios because that, of course, would break the sound barrier, so to speak.
Right. They didn't have this, you know, the silencing windows and all the layers that we have today. But then it was 1923. So again, we're leading up to when WGN was really launched. Board of Trade purchased WDAP, and then they started. But it was also, back then, it was really a lot of music and maybe some news. There wasn't even sports back then. It was a lot of music, right? I mean, that's really what kind of launched radio.
Oh, yeah, and much of it was not recorded, but it was live music. And they in those days, those stations, as much as they were going along, like WGN, working on a shoestring kind of a budget and not really hoping to get much revenue from such nasty things as sponsors, as they used to think about. So they thought that they would, they wanted to do the best they could for programming, so then they had an orchestra. It might have been a 6-piece orchestra or a 12-piece orchestra, and they broke up members of the orchestra into little ensembles, and they would be performing at different times of the day. And in the early days, no wire services were going into WGN, but the Tribune was providing stories, news stories, and stock reports, and a few other things. Sometimes you get little brief news reports. They would call them headlines today, but basically that's what they were doing, all for that little box that picks up sounds from the air.
Yeah, right, right. Well, you were talking about a shoestring budget. I think we're still on a shoestring budget over here.
Yeah.
That's
well,
a radio business I've
radio
learned.
Today. Yeah,
that's exactly. That's right. So, you know, he was leasing WJZ. Now, this was a station that was launched by Zenith in 1923 at the Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Right. Which later took on call letters of WEBH, which, of course, stood for the Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Okay.
And, by the way, you might as well mention that WGN stood for what Colonel McCormick called the Chicago Tribune the world's greatest newspaper.
Right, exactly.
WGN.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't call it the world's greatest station because they didn't have any background on that yet, but it was always the world's greatest newspaper, yeah.
Now, what's funny is in 1924, as really we were approaching the launch, the station, that the Chicago Tribune stated that there was more than 100,000 radio sets in the Chicago area. And I would think that's a lot for back then, because that was an expensive piece to have in your home.
Well, you might think it is an awful lot of sets in the Chicago area, but I'll tell you, this was the biggest thing ever. This was the greatest thing since vaudeville and phonograph records, to have a, as Colonel told his mother, a little box in your home to bring you this entertainment into it. And interestingly enough, most of those sets were pretty easily priced.
Okay.
And you would buy a radio receiver, but you didn't necessarily get the tubes with it, and you didn't necessarily get the speaker with it. So we were buying components. I wasn't, but somebody was buying.
You were buying
the component parts. So if you wanted to, you bought your radio receiver from Marshall Field and Company. Then if you wanted to, you could go to your local, there's a local radio store, and you would buy the tubes for that radio. And then you, of course, had to have some kind of a speaker, and there were many stores that were selling speakers. And you could buy a speaker that would be compatible with the decor you had in your home. So you had you might have bought a big console radio, or you might have had a table radio, but you could get a speaker of any size or any quality to put along with that, and you'd plug it in.
What's cool is that when we launched this on March 29th, you know, again, assuming control of WJAZ, we weren't on 720. 720 didn't come till later.
Mm-hmm.
We were on
shared a frequency with WMAQ, I think.
Yeah, so they were on 670, and then we eventually moved to 810 AM.
Right.
And again, it was all kinds of music, and the schedule at that time included a 5-hour broadcast to be heard almost 10,000 miles across the Pacific.
Well, that's the skip, you know.
Yeah, that's the skip. I know, that's crazy. Yeah,
yeah, that's amazing.
That is the legendary. I love my friend Mr. Chuck Shaden talking about the history of WGN Radio. All right, we will be back with Dave Schwann and more This Week in History next on 720 WGN. Dave Player back with you with Mr. Dave Schwann. You know what that song means to us growing up in Chicago.
It means a couple of clowns like us are on the radio.
With no makeup, though. Well, here it is.
That, boy, you hear the first two
that's
notes
Bozo Circus.
That.
Bozo Circus.
Is,
and that's actually Bob Trendler, who was WGN's original conductor on radio.
Oh, you know, it was so great. Years ago, Dave, I was listening to some program from the past on WGN that they were rerunning on Christmas Eve or something. And, you know, one of the great announcers from then, Carl Grayson,
yep,
or one of those guys,
sure,
said, our musical director this evening is Robert Trendler.
Yeah.
So Bob Trendler and his Big Top Band was Robert Trendler from, you know, WGN.
For almost 30 years. For almost 30
like
years,
yeah,
before,
oh, yeah,
he got to do Bozo in 1961, where I think he retired in the early 70s. He just died a couple years ago.
Yes.
He was like 100.
Yes.
He
was, you know, all through my growing up years, the 60s, and, well, even when Ned Locke retired, I think he was still the musical director.
Yes, he
there.
Was.
They scaled
so.
Back the band a little bit, but
yeah,
he was still there. And one other quick note, Dave, did you know that Mike Hammernick is the son of Don Hammernick, who,
yeah,
was the drummer.
He was the drummer.
Band.
Yeah, that's,
yeah,
right. That's right. This is, well, the theme's name is called The Greatest Show on Earth, from the actual Charlton Heston movie from the 1950s. But the reason I'm playing this is in 1881, The Greatest Show on Earth was formed by P.T. Barnum and James A. Bailey, which became Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah.
All that just for that. All that just for that. Lots of history, though, too. 1882, the Knights of Columbus chartered for the first time, 134 years ago.
That's
already
close enough.
Well, listen to this. The order gave
it's
over 100.
Try and do any
yeah,
math.
Right. Yeah. The order gave over 175 million directly to charity and performed over 70 million man hours of volunteer service. I mean, this is a tremendous organization. Mm-hmm. The Knights of Columbus. My grandfather was a knight. Yeah. Always remembered him dressed up in full gear for any occasion at church or whatever it might
right,
have been.
Right, right. And a close friend of mine's father was involved with the Knights of Columbus, and they did a beautiful ceremony at his
sure.
funeral.
Oh, right, they did. Yeah, yeah, I remember that at my grandfather's too, yeah. 1885, the Salvation Army was formed. 1917, the new Chicago Motor Bus Company began operating its first commercial buses. They were double-decked with the tops open. Each bus had a conductor to collect the fare and a chauffeur who drove the bus. How nice. Let's see here. 1929, first of all, in 1926, West Side promoter Patty Harmon organized a group of investors to build a giant sports complex at Madison and Wood Streets. For $7 million in the next 2 years, the arena was built. And the Chicago Stadium opened on March 28, 1929, and torn down in 94 to build the United Center.
Yeah, talk about history. There's a lot in that building.
A lot of history.
Not
there.
Just sports, but politics.
Right.
FDR announced his new deal in that building.
Amazing.
Yeah.
1932.
Yeah.
Yep. Speaking of 1932, Waukegan, Illinois' own Jack Benny made his radio debut. Listen to this. He made his debut on the Ed Sullivan radio program. So Sullivan was even in radio way back then. But
wait a minute, Jack Benny on the Ed Sullivan
radio program? That's how he debuted in 1932. And then they loved this guy, and so they gave him his own show, I think, for Canada Dry, then Jell-O, then Lucky Strike. And then he was, of course, on TV.
And made the transition to television.
From 50 to 65.
Like George Burns did.
Mm-hmm, nonstop on television and radio for 33 years. Let's take a little listen to one of Jack's first appearances.
Tonight, Canada Dry, the campaign of ginger ales, presents a series of programs to advertise the new made-to-order Canada Dry, which you can now buy the glass at drugstores and soda fountains. This series will feature George Olson and his music, Miss Ethel Chute, the star of many Broadway successes, and that suave comedian, dry humorist, and famous master of ceremonies, Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Thorgerson. That's pretty good from a man who doesn't even know me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking and making my first appearance on the air professionally. By that, I mean I'm finally getting paid, which, of course, will be a great relief to my creditors. I really don't know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be a sort of a master of ceremonies and tell you all the things that will happen, which would happen anyway. I must introduce the different artists who could easily introduce themselves and also talk about the Canada Dry made to order by the glass, which is a waste of time, as you know.
That's pretty wild, isn't it? That's his first appearance on his own program in 1932.
There's one element missing, live studio audience.
Yeah, right.
There's no actual live laughter to his jokes there.
But still funny.
But it's still funny.
Oh, my gosh. He's a classic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is a really groundbreaking moment in 1971. Cannon with William Conrad premiered, Dave.
Hello. Cannon.
45 years ago. Please sing along. Frank Cannon. You know what show he came off of? He spun off of William Conrad?
Oh.
He was in Gunsmoke on radio.
That's right.
Yeah. But this Cannon spun off on of Barnaby Jones.
Oh.
With Buddy Epson.
Was he
he was a detective on
that
show.
Detective with Barnaby Jones.
Yeah.
That's
a couple episodes.
That's a long-running show.
Yeah, another one. Absolutely. 72, Bobby Hull becomes the second NHLer to score 600 goals. Let's take a listen.
Pitt Martin on the right side. Left wing pass to Dennis Hull. And Dennis hurries in, leaves it for Bobby. Shot, score, 600! National Hockey League goal!
Pretty cool. Legendary
yes.
Bobby
yes.
Hull.
And what a gentleman.
Absolutely. Absolutely
what
is.
What a gentleman.
Yep. So glad that Rocky brought him back
the times he's been here when we've won the Stanley Cup, he just has time to talk to everyone, sign an autograph, take a picture. He's just great.
And he wears his teeth.
And yes,
very important for a hockey player from that back then. And then 1981, it's very, you know what I'm saying, though? I mean, there's some of these guys show up, they're not wearing their teeth.
I'm talking about
the younger guys.
Oh, yeah. There's a picture of a young Bobby Hull around here somewhere without the teeth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, I think the photo we're posting on our history page will have that as well. And then 81, Nightline with Ted Koppel premiered. Now, when it premiered, it was really not about Nightline. It was in 79. It was the Iranian crisis.
The Iranian hostage crisis.
Yeah, the hostage crisis.
The situation in Iran, they called it. Yeah.
First show that ever had momentum against Johnny Carson was Nightline.